Hello, this is Claire Levy. Coming up in this edition of the DRWF podcast, Living with Diabetes, we have the latest instalment of our special series of programmes looking specifically at women's health. In this episode, I've been talking to Laura Spence, a midwife with ADHD, who wants to improve the experience of pregnancy, birth and early parenthood for neurodivergent people.
With the first two children, there's quite a big age gap between the first two, 5.5 years. I had lost a bit of weight between baby number two and then this pregnancy. And I remember one of my midwife colleagues actually saying I looked like a snake that swallowed a watermelon. It was recommended that I was induced at 39 weeks, although I actually was able to very quickly manage the diabetes. I wasn't medicated for it at the time. I was just checking my blood sugars, you know, multiple times a day after food, before food. Knowing what the risk factors are, that if I don't get this under control, then potentially I'm putting my baby at risk now, was quite terrifying. Because I have looked after families before who sadly, maybe mum had uncontrolled diabetes and sadly have lost babies because of it. So I think when you hold that in the back of your mind, that's an added anxiety. And sometimes I think when you have too much knowledge around the subject, then that's, you know, there's added anxiety that comes with that.
Hear the full interview coming up next.
Views, information or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent the opinions, standards or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them. The aim of podcasts is to educate and inform, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. Neither DRWF nor any of its employees or owners shall be held liable or responsible for the accuracy or completeness, for any errors or omissions in podcasts, or for any damage you may suffer as a result of failing to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who is familiar with your situation.
Hello, Laura. Nice to see you online. You're a midwife with nearly 15 years' experience and an ADHD diagnosis that changed everything. Can you just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I trained in midwifery 15 years ago and actually stepped away from clinical practice just over 2 years ago now to move into sexual health. So work across the kind of women's health sector and sexual and reproductive health in a sexual health clinic. And I also am a trained forensic examiner for the Sexual Assault Referral Centre. I was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 37, so that's sort of 3 and a bit years ago now, without giving away my age too much. I know I only look 28, I'm sure. I've got three children. I've got a 16-year-old daughter who is ADHD and autistic and has many kind of chronic physical health conditions. And then I have two boys who are 10 and 8. And I was diagnosed with gestational diabetes in my third pregnancy, during which time I didn't know I had ADHD, but that pregnancy was particularly complicated because of the diabetes. And I did end up actually with quite marked postnatal depression and PTSD. That then kind of led me down the pathway to getting diagnosed with ADHD. And then all of the pieces of my life seemed to slot in together after that.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your own gestational diabetes experience?
Yeah. So I mean, with the first two children, there's quite a big age gap between the first two, 5.5 years. And that wasn't intentional necessarily, but I had two very healthy pregnancies. I was what they would classify as green pathway, which just means I was relatively low risk. I had a normal BMI, you know, quite an uncomplicated family history. And then with the third pregnancy, again, it started what I thought started off as sort of similarly to the first two. I was around 30 weeks pregnant and I went to see the midwife and she measured my bump and felt that it was measuring on the larger side. So I was referred for a growth scan. And during that growth scan, they said that they estimated the baby's weight to be over the 98th centile, which these scans actually can only be about 60% accurate. The further on in pregnancy you go, the less accurate they become. However, I was then recommended to have the GTT, the glucose tolerance test, which I had and fully expected that to come back as normal. Effectively, I had lost a bit of weight between baby number two and then this pregnancy. And I remember one of my midwife colleagues actually saying I looked like a snake that swallowed a watermelon because I was so skinny. I just looked as if I had this. It's almost as if the bump was out of proportion with the rest of my body. So when they came back and said, actually, this glucose tolerance test is positive, and it was, it wasn't just kind of mid-range, it was quite high. So it put me right into the kind of top management category. That meant I had to see the diabetes team, I had to see the nutritionist, and I had to go and see the diabetes consultant, so the endocrinologist, for management. You could have picked me up off the floor. I just absolutely wasn't expecting it. And I think my knowledge of gestational diabetes at that point as a midwife, helped me to navigate that situation because I already knew what the risk factors were if I didn't get this under control. I can't imagine what that must feel like for someone else who doesn't already have that prior knowledge, how terrifying that must feel. So it was quite a difficult thing to navigate with added complexity of, I have a daughter that's got high support needs at home. She has epilepsy as well, and her epilepsy wasn't that well managed at the time. We were living away from family, and before the diabetes diagnosis, I was hoping to have a home delivery because we never had any family round about us. And actually, trying to get someone that you trust to look after your daughter that has really high support needs was proven to be quite difficult, when you don't have that family support round about you. So I didn't want to be away from her for a long period of time. I had a 2-year-old at home who was, in the thick of the terrible twos, tantrums all the time. So that really made me then consider what my options were, and that actually kind of forced my hand to go into the hospital because I had become higher risk. So yeah, that's a sort of the narrative. For me, roundabout it.
And your ADHD diagnosis that came after.
That came afterwards. So I went into the hospital and had the baby. It was recommended that I was induced at 39 weeks, although I actually was able to very quickly manage the diabetes. I wasn't medicated for it at the time. I was just checking my blood sugars, multiple times a day after food, before food. And in spite of the fact that I hadn't had any other abnormal blood sugars, they still classed me as being particularly high risk, even though it was very well managed. So it was kind of felt that my options were quite limited. I did go into the hospital, I did agree to the induction. I also had the added complication of a heart problem that I didn't realise that I had. I started getting palpitations. And was sent for an echo. So this became like, from two really low risk pregnancies, this was like then, God, why is this becoming so complicated? So I had that sort of added risk factor. I went in, was induced at 39 weeks, had a very quick delivery, 55 minutes, and it was done. But I would say, although that sounds idyllic on paper, actually, it was the most terrifying one of out of the three of them. There just was no time to get your head around, going from no pain at all to like top-notch full throes of labour and then birthing this baby. And I've got quite a slow processing speed as well. So actually, I was kind of lagging behind like everything that had just happened. I never had a particularly nice, friendly experience with a night shift that came on that night. And there was a lot of, what would I say, conflicting opinions and conflicting advice that I would be getting from different midwives, maybe saying to me at the time, oh, you need to stay in for 48 hours for your baby's blood sugar to be monitored. But I knew that that actually wasn't what the national guidance was. I knew that the baby needed to have two blood sugars above two. I had lots of extra breast milk because I had been expressing breast milk during the pregnancy for that reason, so that the baby obviously would be able to maintain his own blood sugars. And I guess just off the back of that being such a complicated, terrifying experience, I then became quite unwell mentally after the birth. I remember not really leaving the house for about 4 weeks afterwards. I didn't want to go to the shop. I didn't really want to see anyone. I just felt really low. Which sort of led me then to seeing the GP. I did get some suicidal ideation and thankfully never acted upon it, but I went to see the GP and then was referred for some talking therapies. I ended up going and having some EMDR therapy, which was really helpful for PTSD, that then led me to investigating my own level of neurodivergence, I suppose, because my daughter, when I was, for years filling in assessment forms for her, a lot of the time I could see myself reflected in those things. And I just had a conversation with my husband one day to say, I actually think that I might have ADHD. Do you think that fits for me, type thing? So yeah, then that's how that came about. We just kind of one therapy led to the other to then me realizing that actually I had ADHD. So
So, was there any diabetes in your family? Did you have any, apart from your own training, did you have any knowledge of diabetes?
no, not greatly, really. My gran had diabetes like later on in life, type 2 diabetes. But other than that, no, there was no kind of personal depth of knowledge. So yeah, and it can obviously be quite a complicated thing around what am I supposed to be eating here? How am I supposed to be managing this? And I think knowing what the risk factors are, that if I don't get this under control, then potentially I'm putting my baby at risk now, was quite terrifying. Because I have looked after families before who sadly, maybe mum had uncontrolled diabetes and sadly have lost babies because of it. So I think when you hold that in the back of your mind, that's that added anxiety. And sometimes I think when you have too much knowledge around the subject, then that's, there's added anxiety that comes with that.
So your own knowledge, medical professional qualifications, does that really play into your support for ladies living with diabetes and going through pregnancy?
And I guess it's always really powerful, I think, when you have someone looking after you that has that lived experience. They've been through it and they can really help to shape when you feel seen and validated. I think that's really, really helpful. But yeah, you do what you can do.
What about innovation? Can that ensure diabetes care keeps pace with real world needs and doesn't leave people behind? So CGMs and pumps.
Absolutely. And I've definitely seen where they make a huge difference. Especially when you're looking after someone in labour. So if they have, when we the scan, I can't remember the name, the when we scan for the blood sugar rather than having to do it, because we're checking blood sugars hourly when someone's in labour, for example. So it's far less invasive rather than having to keep checking somebody's blood sugar with a finger prick. Sadly, though, I don't know how far innovation has come for newborn babies, because newborn babies, so babies who are born of mothers who are gestational diabetic or otherwise, who have maybe ex pre-existing diabetes coming into pregnancy, those babies sadly are still having their little ankles pricked quite consistently, before feeds, after feeds. And if it's low, then obviously it's getting checked more and more. to monitor that. So it would be good if innovation sort of caught up in terms of protecting newborns' precious skin on the little feet.
Did you use any tech to support you through your gestational?
No, it was purely finger prick monitoring, but I guess it's probably the management has changed. I guess that was 8 years ago, but yeah, I think it would have been more beneficial if I had had something a bit more innovative that I could monitor it myself.
So, how did neurodivergent patients cope then and have good diabetes self-management? Have you got the barriers to communication and
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think, as I said, it's quite a complex thing to understand. And while there's far more awareness round about those intersections, we're not quite there yet. That we're not quite putting out resources that are, necessarily accessible or describing things for the right reading age or in the right formats. That because we all learn in different ways, don't we? So you might be putting out just written resources, but there's not necessarily something there that's describing it a way that's going to capture somebody that's neurodivergent. And it depends, obviously, what that level of neurodivergence is. And what their support needs are. I do think that we're getting better at it, but I don't think that we're quite there yet.
so what sort of things do you think would have helped you?
I think I definitely learn better when watching someone do something. So learning by example, seeing something being done, that definitely helps. So probably video resources would have helped me. But that's not to say that that's going to help everyone. Some people, need a combination of different formats. It's always good to have written information as a sort of backup because you wouldn't necessarily take it all in when someone's trying to explain something to you. And then, of course, we've got to factor in things like how pregnancy impacts neurodivergent people. So some people find that their executive function gets better in pregnancy. Some people find that it gets worse. And that can affect your kind of memory recall or your ability to retain information, or actually your ability to make those positive changes within your lifestyle in order to manage the diabetes better. Someone with ADHD, for example, typically I am really forgetful. So I might forget to check my blood sugar, I might forget to take my medication. There's lots of additional factors that feed into it, but I think, having these sorts of conversations are really beneficial to just raise awareness of that.
So, definitely communication. What advice have you got for people living with a similar condition or who suspect they might be affected? What's the best way for them to communicate this to diabetes teams, GPs, to try to get better care to support them?
So I have recently found out about and I think it's only available in NHS England, but I'm sure the other NHS organisations in Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland will catch up or have an equivalent. But there's something called the NHS Spine, and you can ask for reasonable adjustments to be made. And as part of that, you can ask for your AIS needs, your accessible information standards. That's something that you can specifically request that will then follow you through your care journey. So it doesn't matter if you're seeing the midwife, the GP, your diabetic care team, those reasonable adjustments will travel with you because when they put your details into the computer system, that should come up. So it might be longer appointments because you might need some extra processing time. You might just need, a more thorough demonstration of the things that you're expected to do and where to be writing down your blood sugar. But a lot of it's done on apps and stuff now. So it might just be, kind of brushing up on your tech skills, etc. So that's a really good thing that I would say. There's lots of, we can give out ideas around what reasonable adjustments might look like, but it's very individualized. So and a lot of people I know might struggle to even think of things to ask for because there's that expectation that you come into that appointment knowing what your needs are, but sometimes you don't. It might be, oh, well, this has worked for someone else. Maybe you need some extra time in this appointment, or maybe you just need this in a different format, etc. So it's just about trying to kind of figure that out with your care provider and making sure that they are carried through, so you're not having to constantly repeat yourself, but also that it's done in advance, so you're not asking for an extra 20 minutes on that day when the clinic's already booked up.
What about healthcare professionals then? Do they need more training and advice and understanding of what these conditions mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's something, so as part of my social enterprise, Neuronatal, that's something that we are really focused on, is providing that education and support for healthcare professionals to help them understand what those neurodivergent needs might be. You know, just helping them to know how to access those things, but also how to navigate those conversations. Because I think a lot of the time, there seems to be a little bit of fear around about it. They're kind of frightened to ask in case they cause someone any offence. And maybe they just lack the confidence because they don't have the knowledge. So that's really something that we're trying to focus in on and provide them support and resources and some education around about it.
Do you want to tell us a little bit more about Neuronatal?
So Neuronatal was founded really after my diagnosis, where I was able to reflect over my 15-year career as being a midwife, and not once was neurodivergence ever considered in any aspect of maternity care. It's not asked about at the point of booking. And actually, when you delve into what a sensory experience pregnancy can be, and labour, and the postnatal period, I mean, the risks are quite frightening. If I give you a statistic, like 1 in 4 women with ADHD will attempt suicide at some point in their life, and that's only the diagnosed ones, that's only the ones we know about. There's obviously a huge generation of women who, because of gender bias in the research being heavily focused on white male children, it certainly gives us only one very narrow perspective of what ADHD looks like within that societal context. So lots of women are still being missed. And because of that, that means that, you know, we might not be engaging these women in the right way. We are definitely missing out on opportunities to improve their mental health, but also things like, you know, I use my daughter a lot in the training that I provide as part of Neuronatal, because she, as an autistic female, for example, she processes pain in a very different way. So it takes a lot for her to actually verbalise her pain. She very much internalises it and doesn't express it in a very typical way. I think as midwives, we for a long time have had how do I describe this? You know, if we have two people coming in suspected labour, if one is huffing and puffing and really expressing pain in a very specific way, and the other is coming down the corridor at the same time, but seems to be walking, smiling, talking, we would make an assumption based on that first presentation that, oh, this one's in labour and this one isn't. We wouldn't necessarily take it that just because, you know, one might be verbally saying to us, I'm in quite a lot of pain, but not necessarily expressing it in the same way on their face with their body language. And I think we get caught out a lot with that, because lots of autistic women, lots of people with sensory processing disorder, ADHD, we all process pain in a different way to what the neurotypical expectation is. So in that case, we might say, you're not in labour, go home, come back. You'll know when you're in labour because you'll be displaying it, you'll be screaming, you'll be crying, etc. But actually, she might not be. And if that's the case for my daughter, when she goes on to have a family of her own, if she decides to do so, that is my fear, is that actually we could be sending somebody away home who's actually fully dilated, and we've just assumed because she's not expressing it in that typical way that, you know, she's not getting her foot in the door, because and I think that's a huge thing that's overlooked. And again, those interoceptive awarenesses that we have can be processed differently for neurodivergent people, that, you know, they might miss the signs of a hypo that they're getting. those very early signs, sometimes it can just be delayed processing, and they might become very unwell very quickly before, they're showing those clinical symptoms that you might have picked up sooner had they been a more neurotypical processing system, if that makes sense. So yeah, that's sort of that's the perspective that Neuronatal comes at, as providing training and education resources for NHS and third sector organisations around that perinatal experience for neurodivergent people. But also then it's a kind of creating community and providing resources for free for neurodivergent parents, because I don't believe that parents, just because they have additional support needs, should have to pay for that.
So how do parents find out about you?
So I'm on social media, Instagram, LinkedIn. I have a website, neuronatal.org. I do lots of podcasts. I also have recently signed a book deal to write a book on ADHD and pregnancy, where we'll obviously cover my experience of what it was like to be diagnosed with gestational diabetes, that we can do lots of signposting. So yeah, I'm just c kind of popping up everywhere, I guess, with my loud mouth, just raising the platform, raising awareness. Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to add that you think we might have missed?
I don't think so, but I think if there are any healthcare professionals listening to this, I think don't underestimate the gravity of the impact of gestational diabetes. We might think, because we see so much of it, that it's not necessarily a big deal and you can manage it, and that might be the case, but actually you don't understand the gravity that that might have on someone's life, particularly those of us who are neurodivergent and have children with additional needs, and the complexity that that then adds to our life, and therefore the kind of mental health impact.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast, and our special series looking at some of the challenges facing women living with diabetes. You can find helpful guidance on all aspects of diabetes, together with details on how to support the charity, fundraising events, news and information on our website at drwf.org.uk. Thanks to all our guests who have helped us explore diabetes and women's health, and to you for joining us. Coming up next time, we've brought together our two previous guests, Sajila Kershi and Laura Spence, with DRWF CEO Sarah Tutton, to explore some of the less common but more challenging aspects of living with diabetes.
We're judged all the time, and not just on what you look like, but also how you function. You know, if you get in the menopause and your lifespan's over, like, you're redundant, you're invisible, and now you add health issues. So I think it's been difficult to try and be really open about having type 2 diabetes, for me anyway.
Laura, do you talk about the diabetes a lot?
I mean, I probably did at the time, yes. I know that I'm supposed to be having annual checkups, because my risk of developing type 2 diabetes after having gestational diabetes is quite high. And that is not something that I do, that I should be more proactive about.
But we need to create more awareness around this, is by bringing people together to share their lived experience of life in general and how diabetes fits into that. It's placing people with diabetes at the heart of what we do, first and foremost, for DRWF.
This podcast has been supported by Abbott. Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2025. Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.